you breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, second half, on this Tuesday. I had to think about it for a second. And I missed the opportunity, actually, when the occasion arose. I guess it was what, in July, right? When did Naval Laughter win that stake, Chris?
Yeah, Naval won... She won the Grade 3 in July.
There you go. And you picked a bad time to win a stake like that because it was opening weekend at Saratoga and it was Haskell weekend. And so it got kind of lost in translation. So we can celebrate that that win of Naval Laughter for Two Hearts Farm, their homebred midshipman filly. And then at the same time, get excited for you and other connections going to Breeders' Cup. I said last week when we're just starting to formulate, you know, what the fields are looking like, I said Chris Davis is one of the best stories going into this.
Really appreciate that. You know, we've had a pretty good year this so far, and hopefully we can kind of continue it going.
We'll talk about the boys first, and then we'll circle back to Naval, who did try the Bev D, and in fact just ran the other day. I saw her in the other day at Keeneland, right?
Yeah, she ran middle of the pack, kind of a lackluster effort. As of right now, I think she's retired. We sent her to the farm. Ooh. She's probably going to be a broodmare. She'll probably be bred in February. I'm not sure to who yet, but that seems right now to be the plan.
Well, still, it nice to for Two Hearts to have a homebred that then becomes a graded stake winner. It only enhances their value, and she. Good luck to her on that front. All right, so I guess we covered Naval Laughter, which was, I think, your first graded stake win, right?
Yeah, she's our first graded. You know, she meant a lot to the barn, and. You know, happy retirement to her.
Nice. Well, in the meantime, it to quote Judge Smales, it's easy to grin when your ship has come in. You've got these two. You got these 2 2-year-olds. Let's talk about Tough to Tame and American Sanctuary. And I suppose. Boy, I mean, it's pretty crazy. They debuted in the same race, and that's one of the things that's kind of cool about this, you know, for them both to go on to the kind of season they're having. Start with either one. Which one? I'm not going to ask you which one you like more because you like them both.
Yeah, no, we definitely like them both. They're the kind of horses, you know, they're both very different and yet very similar in terms of, you know, they're both very talented, obviously. But that race, that maiden race was loaded. They came back with, there's potentially three Breeders' Cup horses coming out of just that maiden race, even though it was at Chicago.
Yep. We've talked,
you know,
to Ravelli.
That horse, one-timer was in that race, Tough to Tame and American Sanctuary. So, you know, maiden races were pretty legit this year in Chicago. You know, I know they get a stigma of being pretty light because of the purse structure there in, you know, Chicago's poly track or whatever. But I tell you what, there were some good two-year-olds running up there this year. So American Sanctuary, you know, it was kind of a toss race for me. I'm watching Breeze on the dirt at Kingland before we took him up to Arlington, and he was just a different animal working on the dirt. We decided to give him a race over the poly just to see, because he was working okay. Actually, him and Tame were working heads up, and they were kind of taking turns beating each other. Justin Tame was a little bit more precocious early. I thought he had the slight edge in that first race, and that's kind of what panned out. When we got him on the dirt, you know, he won by 8, and then, you know, kind of had a rough trip in the Iowa for charity. You know, ran really strong second, you know, they still went, you know, 110 and change. And then, you know, transferred to go two turns. Again, Monmouth, you know, it was tough this year with the no racing crop rules, and, you know, especially with a young horse that kind of needs some encouraging. You know, you weren't sure what you really could take out of there other than the fact that he, you know, ran a good race, got a little green when he made the lead, and, you know, got beat by a Grade 3 winner. So, you know, he carried that over to the Breeders' Maturity at Kingland, which anytime you run into Grade 1 with 13, you know, horses, it's a trip race. And we're kind of, he was kind of acting up in the gate just a little bit before they broke. You know, two jumps out of the gate, he kind of stumbled and lost all chance position. Sophie did the best she could, went to, you know, plan B, because we thought we were going to be probably handy sitting mid-pack somewhere and kind of, you know, make a run. Well, when you're last at the three-quarter pole, there's just nothing you can really do about it. So he ran on, you know, he took dirt, passed horses, you know, kind of had a little traffic trouble, you know, about the 5-16 pole and then even a little bit down the lane, but, you know, stayed on. It was an encouraging effort. At least he's a proven two-turn horse in two races now in, you know, great, you know, and listed company. He came out of a race good, looking forward to it. And then same with, you know, Tough to Tame. He kind of had a slightly easier campaign in a way. You know, he broke his maiden at Arlington, and then we went to just a straight non-winners of two on the dirt at Indiana Grand. You know, he won that pretty easily that day, and then, you know, we stretched him out to the Iroquois, and, you know, he was a lot more aggressive than I thought he was going to be. I think if we drew an outside post, the result might have been a little bit different. You know, we had to sit, you know, against the bridle, almost clipping heels all the way down the backside and wait, you know, past the 3/8 pole, about the 5/16 before we could really switch out and make his run. And the fact that he could be so kind of hit strong and then still kind of rally and finish down the lane was pretty impressive, at least, you know, to me. He's doing well. He's worked twice here at Kingland so far. His last work was Sunday. He worked great. He'll probably have one more before we ship out to California.
Let's kind of break down the two of them and the backstories and the connection side of things. American Sanctuary and Dare to Dream, Mike Faber, and this is an American Freedom out of an Eid Dubai mare that was a OBS March purchase for $47,000. How much of the selection process? Because as it happens, Tough to Tame came out of the April sales, $75,000. He's a Spitester. How much of the selection process are you involved in?
It's a team effort. Mike and Alan with Dare to Dream, and even Ryan, they all do a great job, kind of, you know, different, you know, circumstances. Mike and Alan, they've been in the game for a really long time. My mom actually used to train for them about 20 some years ago, so I've known them since I was a kid. And, you know, we have a lot of trust. They know what they're looking at. They've bought, you know, Breeze shows for a long time. So we all watch videos and kind of come together on horses we like And then I had the final say on physicals because they don't usually actually go to the sales. I do. And we go over, you know, vetting and stuff. And basically, I get the final say on how the horse looks. You know, Sanctuary, yeah, American Sanctuary, he was very athletic looking. His work was okay. I even kind of said, you know, I remember watching the breeze and Mike and I were talking. I said, I like this horse, but I don't think he likes the poly. I said, I think he's going to be a dirt horse. And it just kind of turns out that's kind of how that one worked out. And then, you know, the Tough to Tame with Ryan Ritt and Jeff Gassner and the whole crew, it was kind of, they were actually there for the sale. They came down, and I had watched a lot of videos and kind of like made a short list, showed them the videos. They saw, they liked them, and I've kind of showed them around some of the horses, and we just all agreed that he was the one that we were going to kind of swing for. And, you know, he was another horse, kind of a plain horse, you know, just super athletic looking, but, you know, not a super flashy pedigree, out of a sire who's not quite yet proven for Windstar yet. I hope this horse helped put Windstar on the map with him, but, you know, he was just a really athletically sound horse. And he's been basically straightforward ever since we acquired him.
Tell us about the name has got a few clues. Ridiculous Gasmanian Stables.
Yeah, Ryan Ritt and Jeff Gassner, they grew up together. They played baseball together. And I guess they're just kind of nicknames. It's kind of a new partnership between these guys. I think they wanted to go a little bit different. Ryan Ritt, his own horses in the past in some other partnership groups. I started training for Ryan last year. We've had, you know, a fair amount of success together. We've done pretty well, especially this year, with getting horses in right spots and winning. And, you know, Ryan's great for the game. He's a young guy. You know, we kind of grew up not far from each other. You know, I think we're within, like, I don't know, 10 years of each other in age. So kind of like, you know, same generation per se, and, you know, kind of the same neighborhood. And it's been great. They've been great to be around. And like I said, Dare to Dream has been about the same. I mean, the progression from year to year with those guys, they've given us so much support basically since we've been on our own, and trying to funnel us good horses. And, you know, they're a great partnership for, you know, not the West Point groups, but, you know, somebody who wants to have a little bit more say. And, you know, they're kind of smaller in terms of on that grand scale, but they do such a fantastic job with sending out information, updates, and, you know, we have a great working relationship on where to place them.
Well, the parallels, as you kind of laid out, with both of these horses, American Sanctuary, who's an American Freedom, by the way, and Tough to Tame, the Spitester, starting out both with more starts than a lot of horses to this point, you know, that'll make it to Breeders' Cup. You're talking four starts for Tough to Tame, five for American Sanctuary, so they're nice and seasoned, and you really can see that from a development curve, you know, there's just been, with every start, you know, there's been improvement. And when you bring up the trouble for American Sanctuary in the Breeders' Futurity, I invite people to watch that again. And I made a note immediately. I mean, I liked him coming into the race anyway. I thought he had a look. So
right. Yeah, if you like Double Thunder, how could you throw him out?
Exactly.
But no, that race was a big eye opener for a lot of us. I mean, like I said, if we were a few lengths closer, I think we definitely finished top three. But again, you got to play the brakes. Sometimes the best horse doesn't always win. I'm just happy that you know, both horses seem like they can overcome trouble. And again, we're going to be in another big field, 12, 13, 14 horse field for the Breeders' Cup against very talented horses. But I'm not taking anything away from R2. They've run against, you know, really good horses already, and they've proven that they fit. Obviously, they're not going to be top choice, but I think they're going to outrun their odds per se.
Where do you stand with Sophie Doyle? Does she have to make a choice here, or has this all been worked out?
Sophie's going to retain the mount. This got settled last Friday, after long discussions. And, you know, I feel for her because she's finally got two really nice colts. She's always done really well on some fillies, obviously Street Fan being, you know, a grade one winner.
Sure.
Multiple graded stakes winner, actually. And she always seems like she's had better fillies than colts, and it's just her bad luck that both colts can go long. Both colts are very nice, and she has the opportunity to ride both, but they're going to the same race. So Sophie's going to retain the mount on Tough to Tame. And then Florent Giroux has the call on American Sanctuary.
Very good. All right. Let me make that note. Giroux on Sanctuary. And, you know, stylistically, I guess Tough to Tame would be a little more forward, but people are going to look at American Sanctuary's races, particularly the Breeders' Futurity and the juvenile race at Prairie Meadows, and they're going to think, "Oh, this is a closer," but he isn't necessarily circumstantial.
I mean, he's kind of broken a half a step slow, and I mean, this is a horse that's won going 5/8 of a mile and 57 and change.
Yeah,
I mean the horse is plenty fast enough. It's not like he's just a slow boat and just a grinder. And then even in the sapling, that horse, the four horse, I forgot the name of it, he actually blew the turn into us and forced us to take back again. So he's just kind of been a hard luck horse his last couple races. You know, sometimes that, you know, goes against you. And, you know, we'll just take it as a learning experience for the horse in terms of he's getting a good education and he still runs on. And, you know, we're going to do a lot of gate schooling with him from now until the Breeders' Cup to get him to kind of be a little bit more behaved in there, and hopefully he'll have a better break and not give himself, you know, 20 lengths to make up in a grade one.
In terms of taking two horses to Breeders' Cup like this, Chris, I mean, talk about what it means to your career. This is about what, year five.
Yeah, it means the world. I mean, honestly, it's just a great opportunity for the barn as a whole. You know, horses like Tough to Tame and American Sanctuary, even Naval After, they can really help jumpstart your career. You know, once you seem like you win your first grade one, it kind of seems like a snowball effect. I remember when Brad Cox won his first grade one here at Keeneland with Monomoy Girl, and he's won 9 grade ones this year. So hopefully, you know, one of these two can jump up and get a big piece of it, and hopefully people will take notice, and, you know, we'll have the phone ringing a little bit more than what we do. But I started with two horses 5 years ago for Town and Country Farm, and, you know, we're up to 32. We've finally surpassed that 100th win. You know, we're about a little over $1 million in earnings, I think, this year, from a small stable. It's been fun. It's going to be an absolute roller coaster ride of emotions when we go to Breeders' Cup on our own. Obviously, you know, I've been around, you know, good horses in the past that have taken us there. And, you know, I've worked for good trainers in terms of like Mike Stidham, you know, Wayne Catalano, Pat Byrne, and D'Amato, you know, was my last job. And obviously they've all had some Breeders' Cup success. I've worked around Breeders' Cup winners. So it's just, it's going to be a little bit more fun when you see your name in the program next to them.
Well, and, you know, in terms of let's have that portion of the conversation, too. I mean, you've been on, but it's been a while. And this story, you know, you were born on the racetrack, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. My mom trained for a little over like 35 years, give or take. My dad's been galloping racehorses since he was about 14. You know, they stayed in Chicago when Chicago was really thriving. You raced at 3 racetracks basically year round. You had Hawthorne, Sportsman's, and Arlington, and we were able to, you know, get a good education, but still my parents were able to make a living without moving us around. You know, I was fortunate enough, you know, in a racetrack family to go to the same, you know, schools from middle school to high school. We never really had to leave. But yeah, it's been fun. Obviously, I think my mom and dad might fly out. They're based now in Ocala, breaking babies and starting their own consignment. But I think they'll fly out hopefully for Breeders' Cup, and it'll be like a family affair. You know, I learned a lot from those guys, and, you know, I learned a lot from everybody I've worked around directly and indirectly. You know, you always kind of watch what people do, and, you know, especially it was fun being in California, you know, watching, you know, the Bob Baffert strain, the Hollendorfers, and spending time around Richard Vandella, and just, you know, you hear some of these stories that they tell, you just pick up little things here and there, and hopefully it'll translate.
Well, and you worked for the Stidhams too, right?
Oh, yeah. I worked for Mike and Hillary for about 5 years, maybe five and a half. And, you know, I've known Mike since I was a little kid. And that was a great education. Mike does a great job. You know, they're very meticulous about individualing every single horse that they have in their barn, even now that they've gotten, you know, so big and the success that they've had. You know, I couldn't be happier for them with Mystic Guide winning the Dubai World Cup for them, and, you know, some of the better horses now that they seem to have gotten. I'm glad they really haven't kind of changed their style. They taught me an immense load of knowledge for that way. And I based a lot of what I do off, you know, what they did, because I saw the success that they've had. I can't thank them enough for the opportunity to have worked for them for as long as I have, and, you know, them giving me a lot of the knowledge that I now possess.
You gallop. Do you still gallop, or are you not getting on anymore?
I'll get on horses once in a while. I've been injured a couple times, and, you know, we're at the stage now where my barn is continuing to grow. But, like, when I take horses out, like Sanctuary and Tough to Tame, there's a good chance I'll probably be riding them, you know, going into Breeders' Cup. I rode Quick Tempo when I shipped him out there to the Bing Crosby. And, you know, I'll still get on horses occasionally, but after two shoulder surgeries, you really don't want to take a chance of getting hurt and not being able to be in the barn or being hands-on. It's not fun being in the barn with your right arm in a sling. And I've got, you know, I've hired some pretty good riders for the last couple of years. I'll get on a handful here and there, but most of the time I'm either on the pony or on the ground.
Nice. Chris Davis is with us, and we're talking about his two colts that are ticketed toward Breeders' Cup. American Sanctuary coming out of the Breeders' Futurity, where he was fourth, and two other placements at Monmouth and at Prairie Meadows. And Tough to Tame, the Spitester colt that was just beaten a neck by Major General of Pletcher's in the Iroquois. So clearly, you know, two horses. I mean, the conversation and the focus is going to be on the Jack Christophers and the Command performances and Corniche and so forth. But these two, and the fact that, you know, the fact that you're bringing two, that alone is exciting. I mean, to me, coming out of last week, the reason, you know, one of the reasons you came up and I knew I was going to reach out to you was the situation involving Paula Lobo, who's going to bring three, and
right.
there was a bit of a conversation for a couple of days about the piece that made its rounds on through Twitter and so forth that talked about the elite barns winning over 40% of the grade ones this year.
Yeah, I read that article.
And I thought it was, personally, I thought it was offensive you cited Brad Cox, and I really talked about Chad. I mean, obviously, Baffert and Pletcher, they've got decades. But it really is a disservice to people on the upswing, and you can just tell by what you said earlier that you admire what Brad has done. And it's funny, when I would have him on about stake wins, one of the themes was that you haven't won a grade one yet. That was always a thing. And it's, well, Cox can't win a grade one. Well, that obviously, those days are over. So, I mean, everybody starts from somewhere. Nobody was worried about Brad Cox and Chad Brown when they had seven horses apiece. Nobody was, celebrating their, the starts of their career. This, and everybody starts from somewhere, everybody's working hard trying to be in a position like you're getting into now.
Right. I mean, and it's a grind. I mean, you know, my mom, I mean, going back to, you know, before the real big age of super trainers, you know, my mom never really carried more than 25 horses. And that was, you know, in the, you know, early 90s, I mean, that was a decent sized stable. And now it just seems like it's kind of snowball effect. And, it's, you know, media has something to do with it because these are the guys that everybody talks about. They're always, you know, being on, you know, TVG. People are always talking about them. They're seeing winning a lot of races, so they must be the best. Obviously, they're all very good. I mean, every trainer that you just mentioned is, you know, Hall of Fame or should be in the Hall of Fame eventually. I mean, they're yep. standouts. They do a fantastic job. Their horses always look good, so on and so forth. But there's a lot of young trainers out there. There's a lot of, you know, trainers that never really got the shot, whether they're even a little bit older now. You know, it's kind of about who you know and, you know, getting an opportunity with good horses. The horses make you. I don't care who you are. If you don't have fast horses, you're probably not going to win big races. And that just, you know, it goes to show you. I mean, like you just mentioned with Brad, you know, who does an exceptional job. His horses always look good. But it took him a long time to win that first grade one, and now he's won, like, 9 this year. So, you know, what has changed? Did Brad become a better trainer, or the stock did he get just get better? Or a combination. Like, obviously, yeah. he does a great job, and he has done a great job throughout his entire career, which is longer than some people actually know about.
Exactly.
And same with Chad. Those guys, you know, again, nothing but respect for them, and they get good horses. You know, hopefully, in, you know, 5 to 10 more years, my name's in that category with them. But, again, it's just a grind. And you just have to keep, you know, Stidham used to tell me every time, like, when I had 3 horses at Fairgrounds or 5 horses when I first, you know, made my first move from Keeneland to Fairgrounds, he goes, just keep showing up. It'll happen or it won't. Just keep showing up. And you just have to, you literally just, it's an everyday deal. You get up and just go do the job you have with what you have. And try to do the best by your clients, keep your communication level high, and, you know, just keep your nose down and just keep doing what you're doing. And that's kind of been our motto so far. And it's, you know, it seems like it's paying off. Every year, you know, statistically, we win more races, and we're making more money, and we're winning bigger races. And it's kind of getting to be, you know, more of a habit instead of, you know, just like a fluke. No, it's a grind. The industry as a whole, I mean, it's tough. I mean, it tries you every day. You know, you hope everybody stays healthy and sound going into these big races.
Well, and it sounds like you're well on your way on that front. You mentioned shipping out west with, I know with Quick Tempo went out, ran in the Phoenix last week. In fact, we talked to Michelle, was it yesterday? I'm losing track already. We talked to Michelle Lovell, who she had
he
grabbed a quarter. You know, clearly with the kind of movement you do, you know what's involved in terms of arriving somewhere and setting up shop. You mentioned, you know, some more work and then getting out to California. Mm-hmm. How far in advance do you want to get out there to let them get some time
over that
track?
Our plane is going, we're scheduled on the 28th.
Nice.
Which is fine by me. I'd rather get out there earlier, let them settle and, you know, walk a couple of days, kind of get over there. It's a long ship out with FedEx. You know, we have to ship from here to Indianapolis, I believe, and then from Indy we fly to LAX, and then LAX, then we van down to San Diego. So it's an all-day event. It took a lot out of Quick Tempo when we went out there, and we went out, you know, 10 days before the race. You know, it takes a few days for them to kind of get over it. So I'd rather get out there sooner than later, you know, get acclimated to the track and the kind of saltwater air, and, you know, see how they handle the surface.
Well, Chris, I'm really excited for you and for the owners too. Michael Faber's Dare to Dream, and Rit and Gasman, the ridiculous Gasmanian. I can tell already they're going to be a hit out there. They're going to be a media sensation. We got to get them out in front.
I promise you, they're a trip.
Nice. Well, and Sophie, you know, Sophie's going to be a story as well, right? I mean, she's going to attract plenty of interest and attention.
And rightfully so. You know, she's a very underrated rider for somebody who is a grade one winning jockey. She's rode the Breeders' Cup, I think, two or three years, and this will, I think, it'll be her third or fourth. And you know, her brother's actually flying over from England, so it'll be they're both will be riding the same Breeders' Cup day, hopefully, and you know, it'll be fun for them to catch up. And I think their mom's going to fly over as well, and it'll be a proper family affair. But you know, Sophie doesn't get enough credit for all that she does in terms of, you know, getting these horses to relax and finish, and you know, always seems like she can get a good trip. You know, she really does do a great job.
And I'm just, I was gonna pull up the. I wanted to. I just went to the Breeders' Cup website. I wanted to see her mounts from Breeders' Cup. I'll have to dig around for
that. She rode Fioretti for Two Hearts Farm, which is
okay.
One reason why it was very special for me to get my first graded win. That was also her first.
Well, nice. Yeah.
Win. So it was a lot of fun for all of us to kind of come together. You know, Tony Braddock has meant a lot to both of us in terms of, you know, our career and on a personal level. He's just such a great person to work with and for. You know, gives you a lot of trust and support. And then as she rode, obviously Street Band in the Distaff.
Yeah, exactly. For Larry and
yeah, she said she really didn't handle that track at Santa Anita. It was a lot different than I guess what she's been running on. You know, she was a 3-year-old, I think, running against older, which is always a little difficult. Anytime you can kind of stay within your age group, it typically helps, especially for 3-year-olds. But this will be the first time I think she's riding a colt in Breeders' Cup. Which is, like I said, it's great for her, and hopefully people will take notice and give her some liver mounts.
She's well, certainly well thought of, and actually, it's kind of I had forgotten this now that I see it. James Doyle, James had ridden in that same 2015 Cup as well.
Yeah. Yep.
And that was a story at the time that the two of them. That's right. That's right. Nice. Well, I Chris Davis, really nice to catch up and celebrate all the success. And if you're not following Chris, you should. He's on Twitter, CH Davis Racing. And once the Kentucky season winds down, you'll head to Fairgrounds?
No, actually, this year it was kind of a last-minute ordeal. It's kind of messed up. But we're going to go to Palm Meadows this year.
Really?
You know, Gulfstream was nice enough to grant us all the stuff that we need. I'm real happy and excited the fact that they put Tempeda in, obviously coming from Chicago, which is an all-weather track. So, that, well, turf, dirt, and poly to choose from. But, you know, a big factor was, you know, CDI and New Orleans were going to have Jazz Fest in October. Well, that was going to demolish their turf course, and they were planning on just not having turf racing. I mean, this is all the way up till, you know, July when I had spoken to them, and you know, New Orleans is like my home. I love New Orleans. I love, you know, Louisiana racing, and they got a great, you know, state program for Louisiana breds, and you know, it's a great place for us. We've had some success down there, and but you know, a large part of my stable is turf horses, so hopefully. You know, Gulfstream goes well for us, and, you know, next year we're able to, you know, maybe do both, go to Gulfstream and New Orleans, because, you know, I do love being there. I think the management's great. I think the people in racing down there, you know, breeders and other trainers are just, they're class acts and nice to be around. And, you know, I've been going down to Fairgrounds since, you know, the mid-90s with my parents. So it really is like a home for us. That's where we went our first winter on our own, and it's where we've been going every year since. But you know, you got to go where your horses can compete and on surfaces that they need. So that just seems like this year that's going to be the plan, and we'll reevaluate going forward. And like I said, hopefully we can get our foot back in the door at Fairgrounds maybe next year.
It's so funny because I guess it must have been yesterday that the same topic came up and I think I asked who did I ask whether they were going to stay This might have been last week, actually, I guess. I asked somebody the same kind of thing about fairgrounds versus, you know, staying up in Kentucky, and you know, Turfway is going to have a very nice condition book, and you know, 60,000 plus for maiden races. So I thought maybe it might be a consideration, but I can't remember who it was. I had this, and they said, no, we're going back to fairgrounds. So, it just was kind of depends on everybody's, on how, what their anticipation is or was of what was going on. And it was an unusual circumstance that, you know, ended up playing out, I think, well for people because of the cancellation of Jazz and Heritage. And
there's no question. It helped the horsemen out immensely. And it's going to help the handle for fairgrounds because fairgrounds,
yeah, of course,
a lot of the draw for people to go to fairgrounds, if you don't have Louisiana breds, is that turf course. It's a long meet. Obviously, it's 2 months longer than Houston. And the weather's, you know, good. It's a great place to train. Their training surface on their main track is very consistent. It's very safe. It's just, New Orleans is a great place to be. It's a fun place to live. You know, it's probably not best for your diet if you're trying to have a diet, but it's just a fun place. And like I said, it's going to be kind of bittersweet not going there this year because it is, again, like my home. And, you know, I hope everybody who got hurt by that hurricane is recovering, and you know they can rebuild as fast as they can. I know the fairgrounds took a fair bit of damage as well, and a
couple of barns.
I heard a rumor they're down like 100-120 stalls, which, you know, is terrible, but hopefully they get the barns rebuilt and you know, have them up and ready for next year, and that'll hopefully be a barn they put us back into. So
there
we'll see, but it's one of those things when you're running a business and you have people you have to answer to, you can't just sit and wait. You have to have a game plan. And, you know, when they were pretty firm on not racing on the turf, you had to make another plan. And, you know, you got to run it by all your clients and make sure everybody's on board with everything. And unfortunately, when you kind of commit to go somewhere else and then they announce that they canceled, well, you're already kind of committed. A spit in the eye of Gulfstream per se for, you know, when for our first year down there, they gave us everything that we asked for and more, and, you know, have been super accommodating to us. So again, we're going to go down there this year, see how it works out. And then, like I said, next year, hopefully, you know, if we have the horses to maybe possibly split, hopefully we can pick up some more Louisiana breds and some of the horses and clients that just want to be there as well. So we'll just play it by year, every year. And, you know, basically meet, you just have to just continue to reevaluate what you have.
Well, Chris, you're in great shape, and exciting prospect heading to Breeders' Cup with American Sanctuary and Tough to Tame. Well done. Keep them healthy, happy, and we'll see you out there.
Sounds good, Steve. I appreciate the call.
Not at all. Chris Davis, everybody, and CH Davis Racing on Twitter, and easy to root for. 34, 35 years old at the most. 32! Look at this. You're all right. So you're even younger than I thought. Chris Davis, everybody. And there's a story here. It's going to be a good one. We'll stay here, top of the hour, just a little past the top of the hour. Andy's going to join us momentarily, and we'll talk to Popo later as well. Popo on a vacation. That like a 10-day vacation. Looking forward to talking to him. Looking forward to catching up with Andy as well. And I'm anxious for his take on that pick six from Sunday, which was tough. Is Andy with us? No. Not yet. Right? No. All right. So we will. There's Andy now. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Just off with Chris Davis, who's got two-year-olds going to the Breeders' Cup. With a good story. Excited young trainer, 32, and I thought that was nice nice opportunity to check in with him. Hasn't, you know, they haven't won stakes, but you know, they're just underneath, and he's a kid going somewhere. Andy, first and foremost, the pick six on Sunday. That was as tough a sequence as you're gonna try to negotiate.
They all feel tough for me the last couple weeks, but yeah, that was a tough sequence. I agree. There wasn't anybody in the sequence that was you could lean on, at least that I could see.
I kind of rolled the dice a little bit with that horse in the first leg the Pletcher that didn't get claimed, actually, which was
horse get claimed?
Well, you know, 30,000.
Where are you going with it after it gets claimed?
Well, you're probably gonna geld him and.
Well, wait a second. You're a trainer now, as far as gelding. Wow, you're going to geld him. That would not be the answer I would have expected. So, yeah, you go to Nolan's and three with him. I don't know. He went up at 2-1. People already thought he was damaged.
Yeah, that's fair. And horses did get plucked out of there, too.
Yeah. People claim more off of different people. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I thought he was the horse to beat, too. But doesn't mean I would claim him. But anyway.
The second leg, I don't know if you saw the tweet that I had sent out, but I put a link to the race that six of them ended up being five because one horse didn't draw in. But five horses out of that field of 12 were coming out of the same race. And that, to me, that group was so challenging. And I kind of needed Sandroni to stay on, or Bucker 2 would have gotten me through, but Cool Layaban, I couldn't get on the ticket.
You're making some brash assumptions. I remember these races like it was 5 minutes ago. So I'll take a look.
Well, this is the one that Cool Layaban, Cassie, and Gary Barbers ended up winning, and he...
Steve,
you know,
I actually think more about trainers. You're talking about owners. I don't really know this as much. Oh, yeah, I bet the second horse. Yeah, I didn't like the winner. Yeah, I didn't like that horse either. I agree. Strange race. Favorite didn't show.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a frustrating race.
So that was it for me. Then Chulain ran well and got up, but then you ended up with another.
Well, Great Best Warrior should have won that race.
Yeah, that's
probably
right. That's true. That's true. And actually, boy, I'm just noticing this for the first time. Chulain took all the money, ended up going off favored.
By a nickel.
By a nickel, yeah. But I hadn't realized how much money.
Well, three horse race between the top three finishers.
Exactly. Great. Yeah, I agree.
It was a tough sequence. I'm not, you know, any manifest destiny. I know that Kendrick was getting aboard, but he'd ridden a horse before and had him fourth. But it was a weird race. A race I wanted to get involved in. I guess Too Sexy could have won. She was a little dressed up over last race, but Robin Sparkles can't run. It was terrible, obviously.
Yeah, that was rough.
And
then Wow.
Yeah, she was against the track last time. She had got an atrocious ride in the last race. But she also had a lot of chances. Tough race.
I agree. Three horses that in Wow was 25-20, 26-80 for Manifest Destiny, and do we know anything about it?
No.
Yeah, I hadn't seen any follow up either. But you know, you might get one of those $20 horses. You might get two to get all three on the ticket. That's tough. That is tough. So it was fun, though. I enjoyed actually the exercise, and it makes you remember, Andy, how much fun carryovers, you know, real carryovers are, and then the difficulty of building your ticket that's affordable.
Yeah, it was tough sequence there. The parlor was around $75,000 for a little more, maybe $80,000 or so for a dollar.
Now, this having you know, a real pick six back is fun. That's the bottom line. And this one was too tough to tame, but we'll wait out the next. I should mention actually, was that on Saturday or Sunday? There was a nice maiden winner early on.
So Maxfield's not running the Breeders' Cup Classic, huh? He's running the Clark.
You want to go to that? All right. You want to shift gear?
No, I don't care. We can talk whatever you want. I was reading a tweet from Jay Krippman.
There you go. DRF Priv. And,
well, he couldn't win the Classic. So the question was, they want to run him against Life is Good in the Mile, and I guess they want to run him here instead.
There it is. All right. Well, I'm glad you pointed that out. I had not seen it yet.
And, I'm not sure it can beat Midnight Bourbon.
Jay with a couple of stories the last couple of days, and we'll talk to him at the end of the week. But Rad Ortiz picked up the mountain.
That changed everything for me.
On Triple A.
Yeah, that's going to change the whole thing.
Well, I was there when he won the Pacific Classic, and
that's really exciting.
Oh well,
so you're at the Breeders' Cup, that'll help him. Then you being there, it'll encourage him to run 5 or 6 lengths faster than he's ever run before, and still lose.
He'll make a run.
No, he won't.
Okay, we'll see.
Whatever.
Give us your take on the Sands Point, because Fluffy Socks and I think I heard you either say or tweet going in that she was kind of on the upward swing.
I don't think I said or tweeted that at all, but okay. Well, I mean, the race changed when Jordan's Leo scratched, right?
Yeah.
No speed. So, getting Fluffy Socks into better position was obviously helpful. And I thought she had run well in the Delmar race. I wasn't sure how strong the race was, but she probably ran the best race of the first three finishers, at least in my opinion. She was wide, and there were she stayed ground. So she probably ran as well as anybody in there. And, Higher Truth was bad. I think she was more able to take advantage and kind of exposed. To be honest, I think Higher Truth exposed how weak those turf triple for the Philly races were. The fact that she was able to be competitive in those races and ran as poorly as she did while setting a slow pace, if you compare them in theoretical talent, she should have won that race for sure on Saturday, but she really didn't run well and finishing third or fourth. And Fluffy Fox has really improved. She ran a nice race, and so did Runaway Rumor, the New York bred. She's really a neat horse. Doesn't seem to matter the distance she runs. She just shows up and runs really well. I think it was on with Maggie. And Maggie, was it Greg or Maggie? I'm not sure. I can't even remember. It was so long ago. One of them made the point that those New York bred stakes, which have been a little bit wanton. I mean, the Philly and Mare New York bred stakes this year have been pretty weak, to say the least. She could just destroy those horses next year, And so she could have a really good year next year. It's a nice horse.
Got a nice number, and part of a nice portion of the the card that integrated with the races at Far Hills. The just digging for there it is. Where is it? You had to dig. Show Me the Honey was part of the cross country, Andy, and she wasn't impossible, not at all impossible, but I
she was tough. She was
yeah, really bad. I used her as a B, and that cost me.
Yeah, I didn't find her particularly logical. That was a race that paced completely out the other. You know, nobody made up any ground in that race whatsoever. She sat behind a three speed, excuse me, and she picked him up, and the speeds ran 2.34, I think. Right? Who else was in that race?
That was that Uncle Jem and Highway Queen.
Right. Right.
I used four, but two A's, two B's.
It was about a race where there was potential speed and nobody rode aggressively. It would be quite a boorish pattern in turf racing where just doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency at all by the riders to be aggressive in races. The only time you ever get paces is if it's, apprentice types or sort of the lower rung riders are on horses and go forward, because the top riders are just universally unaggressive. Universally.
Yeah.
It's very strange. It's really impossible to identify, have any real confidence in how a race is going to be run, because quite often, the fourth fastest horse goes the lead and all the horses with speed just take back, as though one person wants to lead and they just think, oh, I can't possibly have the lead. As though there are some sort of decisions being made by where horses are in their races, not based on how fast they actually are. So it's very strange. It's something that just didn't take place 10, 15 years ago. It's probably the single biggest change in the game, specifically in New York. I watch races at Churchill and Oak Lawn, and speed types are forward, not in New York, especially in grass races. And we run a lot of grass races.
Yeah.
The riders are through their decision-making process, are determining how races are run, and it's frequently contrary to how anybody logically could expect them to be run. And it really makes handicapping extremely problematic. Because I think, to be successful in handicapping, particularly in turf races, you have to have some sort of reasonable idea of how race is going to be run. The riders have basically altered that substantially. And it's been something that's been going on now for, at least since 2014 or 15.
Yeah, we've been talking about it easily that long. Easily.
Yeah, no, it's the fact. And the problem is that it's compromising the chances of their mounts over and over and over again. Rating speed horses is the dumbest thing that a rider can do. Speed horses are good because their speed gives them an advantage. You take it away when you rate them. The logical conclusion that a speed horse rating will close better is dumb, and it's been proven over time to not work. The trainers are to blame, too. They allow it to go on. They give, sort of wishy-washy instructions. Well, if you can make the lead, nobody else wants it,
Yeah.
How about being definitive? You are going to be in front. I don't care if you go too fast to get it. Take some responsibility. But it's the biggest change in the game that I've seen, certainly in the last close to a decade, and since I was younger. You have riders determining how races are being run contrary to the best interest of horses. And I don't think they're not trying to win. I don't think that anybody's deliberately trying to lessen their chances of winning. I think they're just not, they don't get it. And you have a lot of riders that are, not all of them, but you have some riders that are just completely unprepared out there. Just seem like they get on their horses and don't seem to have any idea what they're supposed to be doing with them.
Yeah,
there are some riders who are very, very prepared. And in general, those are the ones that are more successful.
Well, in fact, on that topic, we were talking, I guess that was yesterday, with Rich, and he talked, he brought up, I was asking him, because of Jaylon Samwell's success and on Saturday with the Cleveland Johnson.
No, he wanted to ran the course.
Right, but...
James not to be a bad rider or somebody that's made many mounts, but it's hard to know, you know, without getting a lot of, you know, reasonable mounts, how well or
sure.
Poorly he rides. You've seen him ride badly, though.
But I asked Rich and just about, you know, what carries a rider, you know, from, you know, kind of just a part of the room and just, you know, somebody that kind of a journeyman that doesn't reach the upper echelon and the upper echelon. And he talked about preparedness. In fact, he brought up Raylu Gutierrez and how Raylu went to you and asked you to, you know, to show him, you know, tripping and you know, some of the things that helped him read the form and understand, you know, interpret what a horse, you know, stylistically would look like. I thought that was I hadn't heard that story.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, I don't. You know, it's. I was telling Richie on Saturday. I said, if you were still riding now, you'd be killing it, because Richie was never afraid to go to the front, and Richie would really be able to take advantage of the lack of aggression. The guys were aggressive when Richie rode. Very different game. Guys understood the value of speed in a way they don't now. Of course, no horse has ever wired the field in the turf, so I can understand why they wouldn't want to be forward. Or in the dirt. They all want to come from 10 lengths back.
Well, one of my proudest moments, I think it was with, might have been with Williams Lucky Gray, and I was home watching, and you said something along the lines of, my friend Steve Bick would make sure that Saez was going to go to the lead with this horse and take advantage of, and that's exactly what transpired. So when we stole a race, I think on the dirt, and her only the only way for her to win was on. Yeah, was the only way for her to win was if she went to the lead, and I remember you said that I got that made me smile.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't really have much chance to win, I'm not sure what you have to lose by riding in a manner that gives you your best chance to win. Right. I mean, that's sort of common sense, right?
Yep.
Anyhow, what else is going on?
A couple of maiden winners. One... and actually, I should bring up, I haven't mentioned it yet, the horse that, in fact, Chad talked about it last week with us, right after you were on, or right before, and Haughty. And he said, you know, Haughty was coming back at Keeneland. And I hadn't mentioned that performance yet, but...
they could have a fig for that race.
72.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, Chad's very high up. I mean, she hasn't run particularly fast races. She's run figures that make her competitive. I mean, it's a shame that she didn't get a chance to run Jessamine and see if she could be in the Breeders' Cup, because
sure.
She won her maiden race so easily and got disqualified. You know? Not worse than Jessamine. How did Blissful end up in the 80s? That seemed like a bad variation. She was one of the favorites.
They're, both of the horses, Chad's and Cherie DeVos,
yeah,
both ended up
second and third choices in there.
Yeah, it was weird.
They're in third.
Yeah,
no worse than second and third choice in there.
Yep, that's true.
I mean, Chad was a maiden, unfairly a maiden, unfortunately a maiden. I mean,
right.
I understand why the horse came down, but I think it was so much the best. It was kind of ridiculous. You know, the Jessamine got 16, and the Miss Grillo got 6. I don't understand it, to be honest with you. 16-6. I mean, at least in the defense of Hardy, Chad Brown was already running two horses in the race. So, you know, and extra week really mattered for Hardy. I mean, obviously, I'm sure that Cherie, in retrospect, wishes that she had entered Blissful in the Miss Grillo. You know, I think she rightfully assumed she would have gotten in. But I'm not sure why nobody seems to want to run these races in New York, and they all want to run the Keeneland. Considering this year's Miss Grillo, you know. I mean, that's the other thing. You know, there's this sort of imagined fear of running against Chad Brown horses. Well, certainly going to win more races when people are afraid to run against them. And in fact, that race turned out to be eminently winnable. Why aren't they afraid to run against Brad Cox? He wins a lot, too. She was a big favorite in that race in the Jessamine. She lost, too, by the way.
Yep.
Brad said to me not long ago something like, I don't know, I seem to lose a lot of short price. He made a joke about losing with short price horses, you know, this notion of being afraid to run against trainers. And the trainers, I'm sure Chad had the same response, which is, I lose some run of races with short prices, too. And I'm sure, you know, people like Todd Fletcher would say that, too. You know, if you're going to be afraid to run against people, you'll turn into a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But so it is.
What did, you know, similar, we'll stay at Keeneland for a second, actually, because the principals, Chad with the exacta in the Queen Elizabeth, Shantasara ended up, I mean, winning off by widening length. She trounced. Right?
Technical Now is a nice horse, and she ran a race, but Shantasara's is better. And I think Shantasara is a funny horse because, you know, because she won a mile and three eighths in her prior start, so the impression that she's really a router, and I don't think that's true. I think she's really better in the, you know, the 9 furlong area. And she won that mile and three eighths race because, as we saw in retrospect, it wasn't a good race. In Higher Power and Hata Harajuku, who ran second and third, they ran abysmally in the Sands Point. It just wasn't a very good race. So even though she's not really an 11 furlong horse, she's a very good horse, so she was able to win, sitting on top of a very slow pace and then just a mediocre race. And, you know, we can give it a big purse and dress it up, but that doesn't make it a good race. And in reality, you look at her race in the Pucker Up and you look at her race on Saturday, and she probably thrives at these shorter distances. And she could have a very good year next year. I mean, she was really good Saturday.
Yeah.
Probably one of the more impressive wins in a race like that you see in years. And you know, it's funny with that Empress Josephine. I understand that Coolmore had done that with Together, where she ran second against the older horses, the First Lady, and Empress Josephine ran third, and she came back to win the Queen Elizabeth the next week. And you know, I don't really well, I'm trying to do it again, but just because it happened once before didn't increase the likelihood that it was going to happen again. It's still very hard to ship a horse over from Europe and bring the horse back a week later and have it run really well. Just because it worked once, it probably wouldn't work 30 times, you know? And she obviously finished dead last, and it didn't work at all. It wasn't some sort of secret recipe for success. It was something that happened to work once. Is that fair?
Yeah. No, good. Good point. And you know, just she's on the march, Shantasara. You know,
yeah, she'll have a very good year next year.
Yeah, this is an impressive. I think a 99 buyer too. So she every start in North America this year she's improved.
Yeah, she's a nice horse. Have a good year next year,
and in Flavian Pratt's hands too. That doesn't hurt either.
But Flavian Pratt has won a lot of big races for Chad Brown.
Except did you notice
in the year when Ira Ortiz chose to ride Colonel Liam over domestic spending? in the turf race at Churchill. He said, "Okay, I'm gonna write Bobby in the Pratt. People are gonna find out that he's the rider as there is in the country." He said that to me in April, and he was right.
Did you? There was another Chad. There was a maiden winner.
He won with the horse on Sunday for Farovich.
This was at Keeneland. This was at Keeneland, and
I'm not paying any attention to Keeneland.
All right, here it is. Realm of Law that caught my eye because he's a son of Falimbi, who I liked, the Judmont.
Okay. Do you know anything about this horse?
No, I don't.
Okay. He'd run. Falimbi was a turf horse. He'd run 5 or 6 times in the turf and lost.
Yeah.
Or she had.
Yeah.
And she threw a rider on closing day at Saratoga. You were busy hobnobbing in the boxes, so you probably weren't paying attention to races. You were you're a gadfly. But she's a rider, so there's a short price on the closing day. And they ran on the turf. It was she had like a 5-horse on the dirt. She won a 5-horse race. So.
Yeah, she won nicely.
Expecting a big career for her?
I have no idea. I noticed her because I always liked Falimbi.
She's been around for a long time, Steve. This is not
I understand, but I hadn't really, I hadn't really noticed the losses.
Clearly. When she was running on this, in those turf races, you had a lot of stuff going on. You had a lot of important friends and big races. You can do in that time.
Right. This is so ridiculous.
I'm ridiculous. You brought all this up. You don't even know anything about it.
I don't. I knew that it caught my eye because of Falimbi. That's it. Who was, herself a daughter of Flute.
I know who Falimbi was. Remember her first race in America?
No.
It was in the final race at Keeneland in the middle of the meet, last of the Beaumont, on a Sunday. And she ran against Somali Lemonade.
Oh, wow.
Who
That's...
later that year won the Diana.
Mm-hmm.
And she finished second at about 2-1.
Well,
didn't get a particularly good trip that day. She was okay. I don't think she was any kind of. I can't find this race. What day was this race?
Friday turned out. I thought it was. I wasn't sure. It was Friday's.
Saturday and Sunday is why.
Friday's third.
You know, anybody to come on for Keeneland to talk about?
It's funny you say that because it did kind of occur to me to do that.
He'd actually run the dirt before Keeneland and ran a mediocre second with a 78 flyer. He seems to be proficiently mediocre on all surfaces.
Maybe he can round out the resume maybe on the Tapeta this winter at Gulfstream.
Probably not.
What's coming up this weekend?
For $23,000 not worth a water thing.
Yeah, exactly.
What's coming up this week? 4 days of racing. Well, 2 days, Thursday and Friday, that I'm having difficulty making picks. Friday's card's pretty good. I just have found there have not been too many races that I was able to make picks for the first time I went through it, which was Sunday and yesterday, but I finished Thursday without too much confidence. There's some interesting races on. There's 10 races on Friday.
Well, yeah, I've got the PPs here. And
3-year-old turf stake. Seemed pretty open to me.
On Thursday, there's two maiden dirt races, one short, one long, that might have some.
One long is interesting race. That Ray Handel horse from another mother who ran well last time is back in there. And, Mo Donegal is stretching out a horse that I'm sure a lot of people will be eager to see stretch out. Yeah, that was an interesting race. That's the seventh race. The eighth race, thought the entry would be pretty tough in there. Sixth race, felt like Flop Shot was the horse to beat. Over Value Engineering. You know, when your horses are winning, it feels like winners jump off the page when your horses
true.
Are losing.
That's true. That's true. So, you bring up a good point.
Fourth race, interesting race. Horse never had a big trip last time, Blue Atlas. But I don't know if that horse is necessarily good enough to beat some of the horses she faced, but she did run a big race last time, a ridiculous trip. Yeah.
And, no, some good. Listen, the meet's been good. I know.
No, I agree. The racing's been competitive. I totally agree. Supposed to be the penultimate week, but we're going to stay there. Breeders' Cup.
Yeah.
Again. Well, I mean, it makes much to my chagrin, but it makes sense because we need to make sure people can be there for the Breeders' Cup. You know, I don't know where the status on fans stands that, but if that's
exactly
that, not me. So I won't be there. The last week of October. I had planned to take off the last week at Belmont. The less time I spend at Belmont when it's sub-zero out, the better.
Right, that's right.
And winter started yesterday, so that was good. We went from summer to winter in one day.
And now back to summer today. I said the same.
I mean, summer returns for a couple of days, few days tomorrow.
Yeah, we got a nice spate. Yeah. It sounds like you haven't gotten to it yet, but there's a nice 7-furlong stake on Friday too. That Carl Place.
Steve, I said that about 3 minutes ago on your show. Encouraging. Listen, I don't listen to your show either, so I can understand why you don't listen to it while it's going on.
I
said that there's a 12 horse thirst stake for 3-year-olds on Thursday, Friday.
You started annoyed, to
like
be honest.
New event. No, it's annoying. But I'm going to go. I'm sure in 20 of 12, we clearly run out of things to talk about. But Steve, it's been great talking to you, and I look forward to doing it again soon.
So you'll like.
We need a chance to talk about how bad the James Bond movie is that you told me was great, by the way.
I enjoyed it immensely. So
it was the most derivative, long, boring movie I've seen in quite a while.
I did not have that experience.
I don't think there was a single original moment in the entire movie.
Well, that I understand. That criticism I understand because it does draw from all. Yeah, that's that I get. That's not an unfair comment. But I think I described that.
I have a call anyway. See you later.
Go ahead. I think I described that as fan service, actually. Jesus. I tell you, I deserve an award. And actually, I think an award is waiting for me. I just got a UPS package because my man, Lenny Cohn, Cone's Kosher in St. Louis. My man Lenny sent me a package. He sent me a text this morning. He said, watch for a delivery. And so that means there's corned beef and pastrami and some knishes. And there might be some kasha varnishkas down there. Cone's Kosher, everybody. Lenny Cohn. Thank you, Lenny. Very thoughtful. And we do have Papo. And I can't wait to hear about Papo's vacation. It seemed like it was like a 3-week vacation. There was nothing but vacation shots from you for like a week and a half.
Steve, it was only 6 days.
Nah, it was much longer.
Nah, well, I was off of social media for a longer period, but yeah, six day vacation down to the Florida Panhandle. It's something I traditionally do every October. I've got family in the area, and this year I went down with my girlfriend's family, which was very nice experience. So we had a good time. Weather was great. Ocean was great. Saw plenty of manta rays and got to swim with them. So it was a good experience.
Well, if we're together at some point with Tina, don't do me a favor. Don't bring up the manta rays because she will proceed to tell you a story about Delray Beach and some, you know, coming on the shore, toward the shore, and, you know, kind of looking when the flap goes up like a shark fin. And she'll tell you how every husband and boyfriend, you know, ran out of the water and left their their wife. She is sure that we ran out of the water. I may have taken a step or two toward the shore, but I could tell that I didn't care that it was or wasn't a shark. It was something large in the water that wasn't going to sit up and say hello. I didn't see anything good that could come out of encountering it.
Yeah, it was funny because actually the beaches were pretty busy, but then when they started seeing the black masses under the water, they kind of cleared out. I mean, I recognized what they were just being familiar with them. So I was actually crazy enough to swim out to them because I was trying to touch them, which I was able to do. But yeah, it's just stuff like that. I enjoyed the outdoors and I enjoyed the beach, so it was a great trip.
It looked great. So welcome back, and luckily we did get to pop out a few form to win successes, and none was more I won't say none because there were a couple of helpful ones. But did you see I went back and looked at that Remington race from the two races from Friday night. And sure enough, the first of those two giant-priced winners, right on top on form to win.
Yeah, there was a couple of plays. I went back and ran mostly the Keeneland races through from the weekend. And we had the player that alerted us to Keeneland Race 5 on Saturday.
Yep.
That was a Hotshot Kid. Yeah,
yep.
That went off at 15
yep.
to 1, and you didn't have to do much other than sort by average form to win time. And then it also had another, I believe it on Sunday, race two. There's a horse called Shelby who went off a little over 7 to 1, who without any filters was listed number one on form to win. And then I went back and looked at that Woodbine race, E.P. Taylor, and it had the tri-cold. It had Muta Makina over Lady Dragon T over California Queen, 1, 2, 3. Using form to win. So, it continues to produce, Steve.
I said to Christoph Clement yesterday, I didn't understand why Muta Makina was ignored. That was a tremendous value. I mean, no matter how you were looking at the race, she'd gone up there and had won, and I didn't see what was so scary that she couldn't repeat. And to get 9 to 1 was generous.
It was, Steve. It definitely was. And, it's continuing to produce, which is good. And I've actually started fine-tuning things a little bit more, Steve, within the app using the only analyzing races with within the last 40 to 50 weeks. So I'm just pulling more recent databases.
Interesting.
Year. And it really fine tunes it. I mean, that's the angle that I'm using now.
That's interesting because, and it's actually, it's not something we've really discussed in terms of going with recency as opposed to, you know, the universe of average.
Yeah. I'm kind of disappointed in myself that I didn't start doing it sooner, because when I'm looking at standardized PPs on, you know, pen and paper, I usually circle the last four races, the numbers coming the last four races. That's kind of what I use for a form cycle. I just was not applying it within the app itself, but now I've just click on starts and I go down and I look at the last anywhere between 40 and 50 weeks. I want to see a couple of races within that time frame, and it has been a very profitable angle so far.
I will make that adjustment myself. I mean, that, you know, frankly, that feeds into one of the oldest, some of the oldest handicapping maxims ever, which is, if you go look at things, if you read Tom Ainslie, you know, don't bet on a horse that hasn't raced in the last 30 days. It's, if you did that today, you, God, I don't know how often you'd make a bet.
I was going to say the same thing, Steve. But limited starts, you wouldn't. You would, your betting menu would be reduced dramatically.
I should pull out my Ainslie. He's got those, you know, a whole bunch of maxims that you know, one time were, you know, were really the real principles and the foundation of handicapping decisions, and including, you know, recency. And you know, it's funny, it's still recency still counts, although, you know, it's funny, we were talking about this going into Far Hills, and you know, it's a slightly different situation with chase horses, but you know, the idea that, you know, having had that race would be so much better for Snap Decision, and yet, you know, the mare just you know, was indomitable. So it and then you look at Le Dragon T and Muta Makina from the you know, from the EP Taylor, and Muta Makina was off longer, had last raced in August, and Le Dragon T had gone in September. And so there it's the inverse, where, you know, the horse that was coming in with more rest ended up being, you know, the play. So it things have changed, that's for sure. But, you know, being able to adjust. And obviously, as we get closer to, you know, to Breeders' Cup, we did this last year, and it... you know, be very interesting to make those adjustments, because there's plenty of horses that, you know, just got their seasons, you know, started, let's say, in the summer, and are trying to peak toward their performance come Breeders' Cup.
Right, right. I totally agree. I'm excited to see, you know, I feel like this year the Breeders' Cup has really at least snuck up on me, you know, already 2 weeks. Basically, a little over 2 weeks out.
Well, you're on vacation for weeks at a time.
I always am on. The first leg is 5.5 furlongs on the turf. And I just used the filter looking at races between 5 and 5.5 furlongs last 50 weeks. And it put me on to 3 horses. All are decent prices. Dr. Duke, the 9 horse at 12-1. Rockstar Row, the number 4 horse at 6-1, and then Hope and Dignity, the 12 horse at 8-1, is who I'd be interested in race 4. And then race 6 is at mile and 16th allowance. It has some named horses in it, and I think you could probably try to squeeze through. I mean, Daddy is a Legend looks really tough to beat. She does fit on form to win, but maybe on a backup ticket. Princess Causeway, the 2 horse at 5-1, kind of fit. Dominguez, another horse in there that you can use, but I wouldn't for a pick 3. You got to, at least in my approach, you're going to have to go slim somewhere in this series, and I wouldn't play both favorites at all. I'll take a stand against one, so maybe just use Daddy as a Legend and leave Dominguez out. And then going into the last race, Steve, which is race 8, Mana 16th, maiden special weight. Limited data set.
Yeah.
So I just looked at strictly turf races at all distances. It like the, well, we've got some AEs in here, but if the 15 draws in, as a Mamana Empire looks live, as well as the 4 horse, Gimme Mo Baby, at 4-1, and then the 11 horse, Twin Cause, at 6-1. Well, but once again, Steve, we got, you know, these horses are all stretching out. Mostly from sprint distances. So going to have to do a little bit of pedigree work, but at least just on raw figures, those are the 3 horses that Form to Win likes.
I gave that group a look. There's 2 maiden specials that that are in the pick five. The fifth is a 6.5 furlong. I was looking at, and surprisingly, at this time of year, I'm a little surprised that there wasn't more, you know, pedigree strength on display in these two races. I mean, there was no glaring, you know, sibling strength per se that that jumped out. You know, a lot of times you'll see, you know, some sibling that was a win early type, you know, particularly when you're looking long on the grass. And actually, you know, it's funny, Vicky Oliver's got Stanley Market, the Twirling Candy filly, and she's stretching out. She has at least a sibling that won going long, and that was on synthetic, but Miss Imperfection. And so maybe there's a little hint there. And there's actually a horse of, I think it was of McPeak's, not the Lee Pacoy horse, but the other McPeak. McPeak's got a pair in here, and he's certainly, you gotta look more than once. Hal's Dream, the Exaggerator filly out of the Empire Maker Mare, Pink Palace, and Rosina, that was a Malibu Moon filly. She has kind of a look in terms of turf routing. This is a firster, and you know, Exaggerator's okay, 11% first time out, and not great on turf. But the turf breeding is going to come from Pink Palace here as an Empire Maker daughter. It's a tough that eighth race is a very difficult way to end the $3 turf pick three. Have you had a chance to take some swings at this at the $3 play?
No, Steve, I really have not had. I haven't really. I've been trying to save the budget for Breeders' Cup. So I've been analyzing the race, but watching on the weekends, but not putting any money through the windows. But that will all change in 2 weeks, and that'll be that'll be the year. Hopefully, we'll see. We shall see. But yeah, it's a good group to finish off. And like I said, if you can go narrow in that second race, then maybe you can, you know, spread it out a little bit in that main special weight.
The rest of the pick five, there's a maiden special, as I said, going 6.5. That's the fifth, starts the late pick four. And the nominal feature is a 7 furlong filly and mare allowance where Movie Moxie, George Weaver, George could produce a double between Daddy is a Legend and Movie Moxie. In fact, Movie Moxie, just looking at the morning line, she's 8-5. So George is sending out a 7-5 favorite in the sixth and an 8-5 favorite in the seventh.
Yeah, and I just ran her through Form to Win just now while you were talking about that race, Steve. She is the top right horse. The Tipsy Gal, the one horse at 4-1, is not far behind her. So maybe those two, if you're playing the late pick five, squeak through that part of the sequence.
I tell you, I Movie Moxie is not. Those are the two. You got the right two. Tipsy Gal is the other horse, and I suppose Norm Cassie, who won Norm won something on Sunday, I think, as it happens. Norm's horse, Powder River, second off the layoff, is maybe the it's kind of maybe the other horse from off the pace. So 2-1, 2-1-6 maybe in that seventh. I'm gonna do this card for tomorrow, and we'll do the pick five and try that pick three. But the to swing back for a second to the first leg of the $3 pick. Three. I thought this was a really deep and tough group. I made half a dozen eligible here for success. So this is a tough way to, you know, to start. You got that second time first out winner of Wesley Ward's too, Super Design, who's going to be one of the choices. Rusty Arnold's got Thing. This, of course, the famous family that brought you Morticia. This is the Frosted gelding. And Thing is 15 to 1. And you get the services of Brian Hernandez Jr. And I don't think Thing is impossible by any means at a price. So it's a tough, that's a tough way to start the pick five and the $3 pick three. Well, and Popo, I think we got to go. Casey just said, got to wrap. Great to have you back, and we'll start to build up toward Breeders' Cup. Form to win, formtowin.com. Download the app, and you get two free races a day, and you'll be amazed. Sometimes it puts a horse in front of you that you just you look at, you blink your eyes, and you say how, and then you'll go out and watch it run well.
Yeah, continue to encourage people to download. If they have any questions, they can always reach out to me through email or Twitter. And actually, Alex will be stateside next week, Steve. We're getting him over from Australia. It's kind of been hard to get
really?
Out of the country. But he'll be coming stateside for, I think, a couple of weeks, him and
Excellent.
Another member of the team, Frank. So maybe we'll all catch up. I know they may be shooting to come back also for Arizona, since we'll be at the symposium.
Yeah,
but definitely for the next couple of weeks they're gonna be here, which is exciting to meet some other
tremendous. Oh, I can't wait to meet. Excellent. Let's send you out into the race day. Good luck if you're playing. Thanks to Chris Davis and to Popo and Andy, Kim Weir, and Laura Sloan as well. Replay tomorrow 6 to 9. If you missed anything, podcast later and archive, and we'll talk to you in the morning. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America, but we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorsed the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.